Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to Essex Church, where this, our gathered community of Kensington Unitarians, meets each Sunday for worship, as well as other activities during the week. Welcome to those of you who are new to this place, or perhaps even to Unitarian worship. Welcome to those of you who are here most weeks. Welcome to our regular visitors and friends. Just as we've all taken our different paths to be here today, so we as Unitarians are free to shape our path of faith. We are not identified by fixed beliefs because for many of us, beliefs change and develop in response to our life path. But what does identify us, I think, is a responsible search for meaning and purpose, an emphasis on healthy values to guide us in life, a commitment to making ours a more just world. And so I invite you now to take a breath and to tell yourself that you are truly here. You have arrived. Be focused and present. Relax. Know yourself to be truly welcomed, just as you are, with your doubts, your questions, anything that you have brought to this morning, welcome it in, as you are welcomed here. And my hope is that we all find something of what we're most in need during this next hour. And I wonder what that might possibly be for you. If you're anything like me, you won't know yet what you need. But may the weary find some rest here. May the troubled find some peace here. And may those who feel blessed find new ways to share their good fortune with others. And may we sense in this next hour that we are part of something greater than ourselves. Whatever our faith, whatever our beliefs, we are part of the great stream of life itself, flowing, moving, ever onwards together. All around our world, the light of honest thought shines, showing people the path to their own authentic faith. All around the world, the warmth of community glows, drawing people in from loneliness and estrangement. All around the world, the flame of justice burns, inspiring people to acts of faith-filled courage. Here too, may the warmth and the light of this, our simple chalice flame, be to us a beacon of truth, of generosity and compassion, that we may learn the ways of faith and love all around our world. Joining as we do here in fellowship, each with our own joys and concerns in life, yet linked by our togetherness here this morning and by our common humanity, ready to be reminded that even when we feel most separate, we are in truth connected one with another and with all that is. Divine Spirit of life and love, may we look into our lives at those things that are most precious to us. May we find that their value lies not in being held so much as in being shared. As we take a breath, let us feel the breath as it moves and flows in and out of our bodies. This air we hold in our bodies, this air is the most precious thing in the world, every life depending upon it. The nature of breathing is a taking in and a letting go, and so it may be with everyone and everything, held for a while and released. Even that which is most precious to us, at some point has to be released. Life, love, laughter, longing, all part of being alive. As we start a new calendar year, let us each pray to the God of our hearts and our understanding for guidance in our lives, for clarity about the paths of life to take, our next steps. As we take stock, may we face our failings, our oh-so-human qualities, with honesty and compassion. Accepting our own shortcomings as we learn to accept the failings of others. For ours is not a perfect world, but it's real in its imperfection, as we are real in our imperfect ways. And as we accept our own imperfections, may we understand better the deeper imperfections of our world and have the wisdom to discern that which can be worked for and changed and that which has to be accepted as it is. And now, in a shared moment of stillness, we might choose to direct our thoughts and prayers to a person or a place or a situation for which we hold concern. And may we be guided by all that is great and good, this day and each day, now and always. Amen. And so I invite you now to have a look at the hymn sheet that you have, and find a shared reading called Travelling On. And I invite you to read together the words printed in bold. When hope invites us to journey, elusive, beckoning onward, but never in our grasp, may we have the wisdom and the courage to travel on. When dreams glimmer in the distance, fading, clouded and hidden, or shining with new brightness, may we have the wisdom and the courage to travel on. When established patterns collapse into the uncertainty of the unknown, and security dissolves into a memory, may we have the wisdom and the courage to travel on. When the illusion of success threatens to divert us and silence our soul's yearning, may wisdom and imagination inspire us to travel on. When we think our journey has ended in the star-lit glow, only to find the end is a new beginning, may wisdom and imagination inspire us to travel on. I really like this next reading. It speaks to my condition. It's called Fighting Clutter. And you're looking at somebody who's about to take a month off work entirely to fight the clutter that is threatening to engulf me. This is from a great book by a Unitarian Universalist minister called Meg Barnhouse. I like her a lot, and she has a sense of humour, and she's clearly struggling with some of the same life issues as me. I've had to abbreviate it a bit, but there are some hilarious bits about how to clean curtains, if ever you would like to do that sort of thing. Or there is a bit about removing stains, which I may read to you. Fighting clutter. You know it's getting serious when you trip and stub your toe on a book that's lying on the floor in your house. Breathing shallowly through the pain, you pick it up and glance at the title. Fighting Clutter. Some people say, as without, so within, and you are supposed to unclutter your living and working space in order to unclutter your mind. I picked up a magazine in the grocery checkout line because it promised an article called 150 Cleaning Tips. I opened the magazine to the cleaning tips article and left it in the bathroom for 2 weeks until I had both the time and the inclination to read it. Clean from the top down, it said. Okay, well, that's helpful. Only the top of things are hard to reach, aren't they? And they're grimy. Yuck. All that grime slides down on what used to look clean, at least. Yeah, then there's a whole load of things about removing refrigerators and cleaning behind there, but I'm not going to tell you about that bit. Then there's the bit about taking the curtains down. Don't do that. The article suggested baking soda for a mustard stain. Interesting. Rubbing alcohol apparently removes permanent marker. Good to know. These stain-removing tips are too good to throw away. I wish I could find room to remember them in my brain, but that is a vain hope. So now that magazine is somewhere in the house, in a pile of clutter. My mother, she writes, was an indifferent housekeeper. She taught second graders all day and did not have the energy for non-essentials. She grew up in India, and her idea of essentials was not the usual for this country. When my father complained about the spiders camped out beside their egg sacs between the window panes and the storm windows, she waved him away. "It's science," she carolled, claiming she left them there for educational purposes so my sister and I could behold the wonders of nature. Mother banned Dettol from the kitchen, calling it poisonous. If some food fell on the floor, she would pick it up, muttering, "Immunities." So I never learned much about cleaning from her, but she and her whole family were good at uncluttering. When something was duplicated or unused, it was given away or thrown out. She came from a family of missionaries who believed that you should only keep as much as you could carry in a camel caravan or take on a steamship home for your annual leave. I'm usually good at throwing things out. When, as a hippie teenager, I asked my mother and grandmother if there were any vintage clothes in the attic, they shrugged, wondering why on earth anyone would keep clothes that were no longer worn, instead of passing them along to the next person. Now, I remember reading somewhere that if you have things you don't use, you are not their rightful owner. Pass them along so the person whose things they were meant to be could find them. I don't want to hold on to other people's things. If, as within, as without, so within, well, then what does that mean for my mind? A mind filled with other people's ideas that are unusable for me, reactions that don't serve me well, sensitivities that aren't really mine, driving forces that are meant to drive someone else, habits and ways of being that used to be helpful but no longer are. Now, clearing out that kind of inner clutter, that's appealing to me. I have my doubts, though, about whether getting books up off my floor will help with it. It's worth a try, though, and at least my toes will thank me. I once spent a whole summer holiday working in a stock cupboard. This was in the olden days, back in the 1970s, when you had your pick of jobs. Before each holiday, when I was a student, I would actually think what sort of job I'd like to try next. And then I'd find a job advert, I'd apply for it, I'd be generally one of only a few candidates, and often enough I'd then be offered the job and start work a day or two later. I can see some of you nodding, and you clearly lived in those times. I don't know if you're like me. I find it really painful now to witness how very different the job market is nowadays and the unbelievable struggles that people go through to find employment. Not that the jobs I got were always that marvellous, but they did pay money and they taught me a lot about the world and about other people. And so it was that I spent a whole summer holiday working in a stock cupboard. The cupboard belonged to what was then known as the Department of Health and Social Security. It contained two chairs, a desk, a waste paper bin, rows and rows of shelves filled to overflowing with piles of leaflets. And my task for the summer was to sort the shelves, and I was not working alone. The cupboard had been occupied for some years by somebody who I'm going to call Charlie. Back in the olden days, there were such things as jobs for life. And Charlie looked like he had every intention of staying in that cupboard until it was time to retire. His job was to package up the leaflets and send them out as requested by officers round the district. And my job was the annual stock-taking exercise. I counted those leaflets, every single one of them. And I think even at the time, both Charlie and I knew what totally pointless exercise this was. And so we soon settled into a gentle regime of jovial banter, reading the paper, making cups of tea. And sitting in a stock cupboard does give you time to think. And in truth, I have always appreciated those so-called mindless tasks. I'd add to the counting of leaflets things like washing up, photocopying, ironing, etc. Those sorts of tasks that occupy one part of the brain but allow all the other bits to just drift somewhere altogether different. It's a kind of thinking without thinking for me. Time for pottering, pondering, cogitating, mulling over. I wonder what words you use to describe this kind of thinking time. Now, I reckon that this time of year lends itself to this kind of stock-taking sort of thinking. For many of us, it's a bit quieter than usual, and our regular routines are disrupted. And on Tuesday, it will be the Feast of Epiphany, one of my favourite festivals, the time when the Eastern Orthodox Church marks Christmas. Theologically, it's actually quite a complicated festival. It's got many meanings. So today I'm simply going to link in with the journey of the Magi, drawn from far away to visit the infant Jesus bringing their gifts. There is something so beautiful for me about the imagery of this quite sparse story told only in Matthew's Gospel. Not surprising then, perhaps, that artists, writers, even theologians have been attracted by its mystery and have over the centuries embellished the story, guided by dreams, visions, stars, prepared to set off completely into the unknown across desert landscapes, wise enough not to be taken in by the wily scheming of Herod, willing to bend their knee before a child lying in a manger. The lines we read in unison early on, may we have the wisdom and the courage to travel on. May wisdom and imagination inspire us to travel on. Those words refer to the journey of the wise ones, and they reflect back on our own lives. How often do we need wisdom, courage, imagination to take our next steps? And before we take next steps, it's useful first to take stock. This is the process of self-reflection so often encouraged when we choose to live spiritually. I know from conversations with some of you that we're quite a self-reflective lot here at Essex Church. Some of you have regular self-reflective practices that serve you well. Before sleep, perhaps, considering the day that has passed, or having simple reminders during the day to align yourself with your higher self. Perhaps lighting a candle or noticing growing things out in nature. A friend of mine always gives thanks as she switches on a light and imagines at that moment her deep connection with the life of all that is. We can stock take at any time of the year, but there is something, isn't there, about the start of a new year that encourages us both physically and spiritually. How many of us, I wonder now, are in the midst of clearing projects at home? Has anybody cleared a cupboard or a drawer or Yes, and several people have brought things they don't want to church this morning, for which I'm very, very grateful, especially for the biscuits. And as we clear clutter on a physical level, I think it does help our minds and hearts to engage in some stock-taking too. I wrote a few stock-taking questions on our hymn sheet today, and I expect you will have your own favourite questions to add to that list. These kinds of questions can help us in our reflective process, because they're asking us to consider, well, where are we right now, and where might we wish to go next? They're also asking us to go deeper and to consider some of the underlying motivations of our lives. What really does matter to us? What values do we live by? What do we habitually avoid or gravitate towards? And does that matter? So Epiphany refers to the journey of the Magi and their acknowledgement of the Christ child. It can also mean a moment of epiphany, one of those aha moments of revelation and understanding, a time of heightened awareness. I like my ministerial colleague Patrick O'Neill's description, which I put on the front of today's order of service. He writes that we might view religious living as the practice, the acquired habit, if you will, of looking for the next epiphany. It reminds me of the value of being open to the possibility in life, to be open and awake. And paradoxically, it also reminds me that epiphanies tend to arrive, in my own life at least, when I'm least expecting them. It's almost as if I need to get out of my own way at times. Hence, I think, the value that I place on seemingly mindless activities, because it's when I'm not actually puzzling away at an issue that new insights most often arrive. It's perhaps worth us all thinking then what might actually get in the way of our epiphanies. For me, it can be busyness or stuck thinking, sometimes a fear of facing what's next or accepting the unknown and stepping out anyway. I mentioned earlier on that the journey of the Magi has inspired writers. Scottish writer Muriel Spark takes a delightfully different and human approach and considers the Magi as made redundant by their own people after they returned home, rulers no longer wanted by those they ruled. She writes in this short poem, The Three Kings. Where do we go from here? We left our country, bore gifts, followed a star. We were questioned, we answered. We reached our objective. We enjoyed the trip. Then we came back by a different way. And now the people are demonstrating in the streets. They say they don't need kings anymore. They did very well in our absence. Everything was all right without us. They are out on the streets with placards. Wise men, what's wise about them? There are plenty of wise men, and who needs them? And so on. Perhaps they will be better off without us. But where do we go from here? Where do we go from here? It's not a question just for returning Magi. It's a question for all of us to ask from time to time as we take stock of our lives. And maybe then our guiding stars will be found twinkling there in the sky as they have been all the time. It's just that we were too busy or distracted to notice them. And in honour of those Magi, we're just going to sing one verse of that famous carol, We Three Kings of Orient Are. It's there with a picture to colour in later on your hymn sheet.
Oh,
And so may your guiding stars shine brightly in the days ahead. May your paths be clear. In the name of all that is good and growing, in the name of all that is loving and living, in the name of all that fires our passion. Amen. Go well and blessed be.